President Wood,
members of the Board of Regents, members of the staff and faculty of the university, and particularly, of course, the graduating students and their parents and their friends. I should like to, first of all, congratulate you in taking a degree from the most interesting and unique university in America, in a state which is also the most interesting and unique state in America. What I'd like to do today is to present some observations on the situation of the student in a society which is undergoing drastic and accelerating change, along with a suggestion or two on where this process of change seems to be leading us. There are undoubtedly some among the properly proud recipients of degrees on this occasion who may be tempted to look upon yourselves as former students at this point. As I'm going to suggest in a moment, this may very well be a premature judgment. In any event, you've all been exposed over the last few years to some of the evidence of the far-reaching changes taking place all around. Every campus has been overwhelmed by the avalanche of new knowledge which has come thundering down on us, and this is particularly true at the University of Alaska, as you have taken advantage of your unique environment. In science alone, the people who tabulate such things inform us that 55,000 journals and 60,000 books are now published each year, not to mention some 100,000 research monographs. One Eastern university has concluded that its outdated library card catalog would cover 8 full acres by the year 2040, if the system were continued, while the books themselves would be unhousable in practical terms. Bad as things seem to be, the experts say they're going to get worse, with the possibility that there'll be something like 1,000 times as much for somebody to know by the end of the century as there is even now. This is a pretty sobering prospect. However, to a generation which looks forward to interplanetary travel as more or less foreordained, perhaps this doesn't faze you as much as it does some of the rest of us. We can certainly all agree that we're faced with change on a scale and at a pace which has never been seen before in historical terms. A contemporary Rip Van Winkle would hardly have time to doze off for more than 4 or 5 years to find on awakening that he couldn't get his bearings any longer. In one way and another, through private and governmental means, we seem to be determined to rebuild the whole face of America by sundown, architecturally, aesthetically, and technologically. Your own capital development program right here on this campus, assisted in part by the Alaskan oil business, is an example of what is going on everywhere. And by the time of your 10th reunion, you'll hardly be able to recognize this institution. Among the many changes which have come in for notice of late are changes in the views of the students themselves. From the weekly news magazines to the monthly think journals, from the daily newspaper to the television documentary, we've been barraged by studies of what seems to be a veritable student revolt on campus after campus. No sooner does a group claiming to represent something called the New Left announce plans to stage a protest demonstration somewhere than do other groups on the right organize to stage a counter-protest, while editors dispatch photographers to record this historic confrontation for the benefit of the public. One result is that today's college generation has attracted more outside attention than students have been used to getting for a very long time, and some of the more active elements have been encouraged to try even harder to attract still more notice. Such circumstances are likely to propel both bizarre individuals and bizarre viewpoints into the limelight. It appears that an appreciable number of the leaders of some of these groups do not happen to be students at all. Many are either non-students or former students who find the campus a good place to draw attention to their views on anything from vulgarity to Vietnam. It is certainly true that we're likely to go badly astray if we try to characterize the entire student group on the basis of the actions of what are, by most accounts, a relatively small minority of the student body. Although the current minority does make more noise, I doubt that it's relatively much more numerous than were the drivers of Stutz Bearcats in the 20s, of which Mr. Tripp and I were members, in terms of the vastly larger campus populations of today. Still, there's evidence that today's college generation is different in its outlook from those of earlier years, and it would be remarkable indeed if this were not the case. In an era of truly revolutionary change, one can hardly expect today's students to spend their time sitting around the old fraternity, engrossed in plans for the victory celebration after the big game with Siwash. It just isn't that kind of a world anymore. There are some new attitudes today behind the extremists, which seem to be fairly widespread throughout the entire student body. Many of those on our campuses show signs of a strong element of selflessness in their aspirations, in terms of wanting to build a better world, militantly to serve a cause. To me, there are some very positive elements in what is called the student revolt, in terms of a greater idealism and a greater willingness to act in support of these ideals. I would be the last to deny the existence of negative aspects as well. As a former university administrator, I know the complexities and difficulties involved, and student demands to take over the running of the place, including the curriculum, strike me as intolerable. Such foolish demands contradict the whole concept of an institution of higher learning, the transmission of learning and wisdom to a new generation. We've also seen a fair number of student protest movements which were apparently based on nothing more substantial than a simple desire to protest, and which have ended up voicing some rather ridiculous complaints. Surely there are more worthy subjects of dissatisfaction in the atomic age than denial by a university administration of the right to public display of offensive language. As for militant student views on the nation's foreign policy, much as I can understand the concern involved, I remain skeptical that we are likely to realize many vital insights from this quarter, if I may say so respectfully. One such debate on Vietnam, which I attended recently, was given over largely to the impassioned reading of opposing accounts taken from the daily newspapers, as each side sought to demonstrate the wisdom of its position. This is hardly a way to get to the bottom of a complex issue when senior members of key congressional committees are heard to complain that they cannot themselves get enough hard information about the matter to permit rational judgments. Some of these shenanigans bring to mind the marginal note found on an old sermon inherited by a new pastor from his predecessor. Next to one particular passage was the notation, "This section weak, shout." Nevertheless, this unrest and activism on the campus is at least evidence of vitality and of change. From civil rights activities here at home to service in the Peace Corps in countries around the globe, students are getting involved today in causes they believe in, and nothing I have seen would make me likely to sell the whole generation short on promise. Preoccupation with a cause, however weird that particular cause may look to some of us, is at least intellectually superior to flagpole sitting and cramming into telephone booths, which were among the glorious accomplishments of an earlier era, and I think it points to a more thoughtful generation. Heaven knows we're going to need all the thoughtful people we can get our hands on, and I would like to think the increasingly serious attitudes found on the campus in part reflect an awareness of this fact. It is not easy to see just where the accelerating technological and cultural revolution to which I've referred is likely to take us in the next few years. Incredibly deadly weapons are already with us, as are the computer, manned spacecraft, and instantaneous worldwide communications, and almost instantaneous worldwide travel, as Mr. Tripp has described. To name but a few developments of relatively recent origin. One fearless prognosticator has already announced that by the year 2000, no employee will work more than a one-hour week, thanks to automation. This bold prediction was promptly shot down by critics who pointed out that 1 hour a week wouldn't even provide enough time for coffee breaks, much less for any work. There have also been some authoritative predictions of a quite different nature, and these seem considerably more likely to me than visions of a population with nothing more demanding to do than to sit around looking at wall-sized television screens and pressing buttons. The man who coined the word automation has estimated that 60 million jobs will change in character within the next generation. By interpolation, we can conclude that this means that those now entering school can expect their vocations to change three times before they retire. There's plenty of evidence that this process is already underway. The pace of change is so quick that we can already find people whose knowledge has become obsolete within a decade or less from the time they received advanced degrees. Those of you graduating today face a different prospect from that of your father's time. To a considerable extent, college graduates then could leave the campus with a reasonable certainty that most of their formal education was behind them. For most of you, education seems likely to be a lifelong process, a never-ending struggle to keep up with and master new developments both within your own field and outside. By any standard, yours promises to be a challenging and exciting time, more so than any which has preceded. Even without the demands of the new technology, there's more than enough unsettled business which we've created for you to keep you occupied. Nuclear proliferation, sharply rising populations worldwide, the emergence of scores of new political entities, a widening gap between rich and poor nations, hot and cold wars, all of these developments pose problems which somebody's going to have to solve. In your search for meaningful careers through which you can contribute something to the age-old struggle for a better world, let me suggest that you keep open in your minds the possibility of a corporate career. I know it's fashionable in many collegiate circles to downgrade corporate activity as being sterile, regimented, and self-serving, at least in comparison with teaching, research, government service, or just about anything which does not bear the business label. This happens to be nonsense, much of it propagated by people who have no corporate experience whatever, and who have not even grasped what it is that a corporation really does. Our economic system has, for the first time in history, made it possible for a nation to think seriously about the total elimination of want within its borders. At the same time, our economy is so productive that we can devote huge amounts of goods and capital each year to aid others around the globe and for the defense of other free societies. As the principal mechanism for the creation of the wealth which underlies our accomplishments, The corporation has been and will continue to be a major force for creative change in our society. But in order to continue this essential role, it's going to need some of the best young people we can produce. The corporation exists in an atmosphere of constant change and is itself the initiator of change. For anyone interested in change and in challenge combined with accomplishment, most of the contemporary frontiers are to be found within the business corporation. By way of example, let me cite the industry with which I've been associated since leaving the campus. By providing the first truly abundant, low-cost source of energy and mobility in history, the petroleum industry has brought about a revolution in living standards within a few generations, which dwarfs the progress made over the preceding thousands of years. At this very moment, we're engaged in a massive search for oil here in Alaska, from the Cook Inlet to the North Slope, which has the promise of turning this state from a petroleum frontier into an important source of world energy. Needless to say, this has been a costly and demanding undertaking in view of the climatic and logistic factors involved. Drilling in the Cook Inlet, where results have been most favorable thus far, has presented a combination of problems unlike any the industry had ever experienced in offshore operations. Tides change every 6 hours, rising and falling from 30 to 35 feet, and the water moves faster than a good-sized river flows at flood stage. From early December to mid-April, the inlet is clogged with ice flows, crashing back and forth with the tides. Drilling platforms capable of withstanding the impact of a 1,500-ton ice mass striking the legs at velocities of up to 7 miles per hour must be fabricated some 2,000 miles away and towed all the way to the inlet. Even excluding the cost of drilling equipment and production facilities, each of the new platforms going into operation in the inlet represents an investment of $8 to $10 million. Up to this point, the industry has spent nearly $450 million in the oil search in Alaska and has commitments to spend a further $130 million more this year. Even in this great pioneering state, this is a good-sized pioneering venture, and the return to the oil and gas industry thus far has been little more than a fourth of the amounts already invested. There's a long way to go before the operation moves into the black, and over 100 dry wildcat wells have been drilled since the first successful discovery. Nevertheless, we share your optimism, indeed enthusiasm, on Alaska's petroleum future, and we're willing and happy to accept the risks. Already, however, benefits to the state and shared by the University of Alaska from bonus bids on leases and from royalties have been so great that the date of the first oil discovery in 1957 has been termed, I understand, possibly the most important date in all of Alaska's colorful history. By itself, of course, discovery of oil or natural gas is only the opening act in a drama involving an interconnected global industrial complex unlike anything ever put together before by mankind. Before the show is over, and these things you will see, these raw materials will be transformed into thousands of products which generate electricity, drive and lubricate machines, heat homes, fertilize farms, and provide the feedstocks for everything from plastics to detergents to synthetic fibers. Finally, they have to be made available at competitive prices to consumers scattered all over the face of the earth. In very literal terms, it is a gigantic corporate undertaking. Yet this is only one industry in a world in which new industries are springing up every year, while older industries are becoming larger and more sophisticated. Corporate management decisions are taking on more demanding dimensions daily. They are becoming more complex, more far-reaching, and they have to be made faster. In corporations of any size, someone has to make continuous decisions that directly affect the lives of thousands of people and involve millions of dollars and are projected into a future environment whose political, social, technological, and economic outlines are vague at best. Successful performance in such a framework demands wisdom and intellectual capabilities of a very high order, and it also carries with it heavy moral responsibilities. Guiding contemporary corporate affairs happens to be among the most challenging and exciting activities to be found anywhere in our society, and it cannot avoid becoming even more so. For those of you who have the intellectual capacity, the determination, and the vision that is called for, there are few careers in life which can match the challenges and opportunities to be found within today's industrial corporation, nor are there many which involve as great a contribution to society, both directly and indirectly. Whatever path you decide to follow, the times in which you're going to live are going to call for the very best each of you has to offer. The very best of luck to you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kempton, for these very stimulating and encouraging insights into Alaska, its present, and its potential.